Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go on a Wednesday. It is Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Coming up in about 30 minutes, Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, going to join us. We'll talk about not only the Chiefs and their win this past Sunday, looking ahead and how he feels about the AFC, but also the news earlier today in the NFL that another rookie quarterback going to get an opportunity this week. Last week it was Jackson Dart for the Giants. This week it's Dylan Gabriel for the Browns. Now he's the first quarterback to make his debut in an international game in NFL history. It's an interesting spot there as they take on the Vikings in London. So we'll get into that, not only with Russ Tucker, but we'll obviously talk about that a little bit too.
You know, go ahead and just start a rookie quarterback against the Vikings defense on the road. We'll get into it. And obviously it immediately asks the questions about Sanders and how
he's not even listed as the backup. He's the third stringer
currently. So will he get on a football field this year? And unfortunately for Gabriel, that's just a part of the questions that immediately get asked when you're already starting. A third-round quarterback doesn't usually get to the starting role this quickly.
Week five, yeah.
So that's pretty uncommon. But, I mean, I did ask. We felt like on Monday we asked that. Like, I mean, how long can you really just roll out Joe Flacco and hope for the best? This week, starting quarterbacks in the AFC North, do you know what we're staring down the barrel of? I mean, think about it.
Crappiness.
Dylan Gabriel, Jake Browning.
Uh-huh.
Who the hell starts for the Ravens? And Aaron Rodgers, who starts for the Ravens? Who's the backup for the Ravens? Do we know?
Cooper Rush, right?
Cooper Rush. This is always like a good idea of never go into a season definitively knowing who the best division is football is. I remember us thinking about the AFC West this way a couple years ago, and it turned out not to be that way at all. And some of it is because of injury. But even with Lamar Jackson, they're 1-3. The Browns obviously stink. It's just like that division's bad. Like that schedule doesn't look so hard for the Steelers all of a sudden when they're playing nobody. So I still think they're winning the division, which is unbelievable.
Yeah, it may only take 10 wins the way things are trending with everybody else in that division. But we start with the Chiefs here on a Wednesday. You guys can always interact with us on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. Video stream up and running. Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, X. Make sure you subscribe. Makes it easy. It pops right at the top of your YouTube page. You don't miss any of the shows here on 96.5 The Fan. Let's talk offense a little bit. There was just some more numbers to back up what you saw with your own eyes, right? Like if you're saying, okay, but how was it really as good as what I saw out there? Or how bad was it in the weeks prior to that statistically? Where do the Chiefs stack up? Jesse Newell over at The Athletic put out some trends that they come from True Media Sports who track some of this stuff. But the Chiefs offense has scored on 54% of their drives this year. And if you're wondering, okay, well, is that like really good? Well, it's third best so far.
So they're really good.
Now, you probably wouldn't have expected to say that their offense is worse than the Colts. If I have told you before the season, I said, hey, Cody, their offense is worse than the Colts, you'd say, oh, gosh.
It would be a pretty troubling sign.
This year, so far, it's a good thing. It's the third best offense in the NFL in terms of scoring 54% of its drives behind only the Colts, and you're not surprised to hear the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. What stands out about that is, are we just down to fix the red zone issues and we're all good to go here? All systems go? Because it is a pretty good sign, admittedly, that they're scoring on 54% of their drives, which is third best in the NFL. That means they're moving the ball effectively, getting it into scoring position regularly. And that's with, I would say, some kicking trouble.
Three misses.
Yeah, and four total. Like, he's missed a kick in every single game so far this year.
They'd be in the 60% range.
Yeah, they would be right at the top of the NFL at moving the football. And they were doing that because it's not like they scored 100% of their drives this previous week, although that definitely drove the number up. They are scoring at a much better rate than I was expecting, which means, I go back to the initial thought. If Rashee Rice is anywhere close to what he looked like in the first four games, if he's 85% or better, Gold, of how he looked in the first four games last year, they're going to be a top five offense, a top three offense in football the rest of the way. That's my stance on this. And some of the backup numbers there do support some of that. The idea that they're scoring on that high of a percentage tells us something important.
Yeah, this offense, despite even the terrible first half against the New York Giants, despite what we saw in Brazil you're seeing that there's still some underlying numbers. This is even prior to this past week. I think we were talking, they were seventh in, you know, EPA per play and some of these other deeper stats about the offense that showed that there was something there still, even with the issues. And then we just all saw it become so visible and easy for everybody to see if you just watch the game without even looking at any of these numbers, because once Xavier Worthy was on the field, the offense was clicking.
Yep.
This is the difference. Like, we're functional offense, yes. Explosive, dynamic, elite. That's what you're hoping you see when Rice and Worthy are on the field at the same time, and that's what we've been talking about for weeks. But now, can they be functional and all that before then? I think the answer is yes. They just showed me that against the Ravens. I understand that the Ravens have their injuries, and so we want to say, hey, will they do it to that extent against a team like Jacksonville? And we're going to talk more about their defense coming up at 11 o'clock today on the show. Yeah, that'll be a really good test for them. But they have shown enough to me where, can they be functional? Can they move the ball on a regular basis? All that is answered. It's now, can they just be explosive and be one of the better offenses the rest of the season? That's the question for
me. Last year, and this is the part that's always lost in a goal, because we didn't really enjoy watching last year's offense. Last year's offense was efficient in some areas too. It wasn't good overall, but it was efficient in some areas, like how many plays per drive and how often those drives ended in success or didn't end in a punt or this other stuff. And look, some of this is because they've been more aggressive and the stuff that comes with it. But yeah, I take this as a good sign for where this team is headed. And I take it as a really good sign that there's still a possibility of them being significantly better going forward. This last game obviously was maximum of any offensive game they put together in some time.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. That's pretty much as high as it would get for them at any one point. And I don't think some of these numbers are going to hold up, but you got to really remember like where Xavier Worthy could end up at the end of the year, where and who they've been throwing to in this early portion of the season, and why I still think, and I know we'll talk about it later, why I still think Patrick Mahomes has a real good shot at MVP.
Yeah,
especially after that game on Sunday.
Third best odds right now. There's definitely a path, to say the least, for Patrick Mahomes to find a way to win MVP this year. We will take a look at the odds a little bit later on. You mentioned, you know, pacing, and these are fun to look at, and we'll go through and see which ones are most likely to happen. But it was Price Carter put these out. Actually, I want to give him credit for doing the legwork on it. But Patrick Mahomes pacing, we'll get to him in a second. I want to start with the wide receivers because this is more interesting. Hollywood Brown right now, okay, heading into week five. He's been healthy. He's obviously had an offense that up until this past week hasn't had Worthy and Rice. He's pacing for a 94 catch, 888 yard, 4 touchdown season.
I gotta say, what is he catching every pass for 4.5 yards?
That's what happens when you had 16.
94 for 888? Yeah, that's a bad ratio.
Week one, wasn't it 16 targets or something like that? Or 16
catches?
And he
didn't have like a ton of yards to go with it.
Look, I've been over the years, the 2 years that he's been here, I've been more optimistic on what he could do than you, obviously, even when he was healthier or now is healthy. I also don't think still that he's...
I don't think he's finished with 888 yards. I will take, however...
650, 700.
Yeah, I'll take right in that range. That great. Sounds fine. That's what I said from the beginning.
Quite honestly, if he has 888 yards...
Something went wrong.
Yeah, it means Worthy got hurt again or yeah. Rice got hurt or you know, I mean, I just don't think if Rice and Worthy and Kelce are all available... It's just the reality of the weapons they would have at that point. There's not really room for Brown to have 888 yards. Does that make, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, you know what also stands out about that? It's passing the eye test for what we've seen, which is Hollywood Brown doesn't look explosive. Hollywood Brown looks like younger Juju. As in, if you would just like a possession receiver to go 6 or 7 yards down the field and catch a slant, congratulations. Hollywood Brown is available to do that. He doesn't look like more than that, I guess.
Yeah, and then Travis Kelce. Here's his pacing stats so far through four games. 64 catches, 774 yards, so just under, and then 4 touchdowns as well. So this one's a little more interesting to me. I actually think touchdown-wise, he could finish with more still. Like, he's pacing for four.
I think the yardage is probably close.
I don't think we're far off on the yardage. I think I don't remember what we did this conversation in camp. I think the 800 to 850 range was kind of where I had settled.
I was in the 900 to 950 range.
I think, you know, you're right though. Like 750 to 850 is probably being realistic.
Yeah, most likely. I still think he's going to have more opportunities now that all these guys come back. Agreed. There's less targets to go around, but his job will be easier.
But I don't think the receptions. Well, I don't think he'll only end with 64. We had this discussion also in camp about he's not going to be a 9,500 catch guy anymore. Nope. 65, 70 is probably the range. The one on this that I actually think he will outpace for sure is the touchdown. I don't think he's going to finish with only 4 touchdowns this year. He has 1 through 4, so that's the pace. I get it. something tells me he will end up with like 7 to 8 when the season is over. And then Tyquan,
he's going to have the most hilarious one of the bunch because he's going to be on pace without even looking. He's going to be on pace for like 500 yards and 40 touchdowns somehow because of the way he has been catching the football.
We know his deep threat, but this past week he was a red zone threat. He got a touchdown. His current pacing numbers, 43 catches.
Okay.
774 yards. Identical yards as Kelce with, 21 fewer receptions.
Because everything's for 20 yards down the field.
For sure. And then 13 touchdowns is his pacing for the season.
Oh, boy.
13.
Is
assuming Rice and Worthy will be on the field at the same time in a month, and hopefully
he's
for
not
going to
finish with like 10, even is he?
I think he could have 8.
How many does he have right now? If he's pacing for 13. He must have like 3.
He's got he had 1 that week. He had the week before. Yeah, he's got 3.
He has 3. I take 7 or 8. That is a funny pacing stat, though. The idea that he's pacing for 43 catches, but that 13 of them will be for a touchdown. They obviously like him in the red zone. He hit him on that. Like, all of his receiving touchdowns aren't deep, necessarily, receiving touchdowns. The last one was just a regular red zone target, even though, again, we know they'll have Rice and Worthy on the field together as long as somebody stays healthy for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, his yards per reception, it's weird. You would think that they'd, because we've been talking about the deep threat, it's actually been going down each week, which tells me he's becoming more of a, as you said, a red zone guy, too, on top of the ability to go down
the
field.
He's just getting less snaps.
Yeah. I mean, he only had 2 targets last week. Worthy was back. 1 catch, 11 yards of the touchdown. The week before, we all know he had the deep catch for 33 yards. 5 catches for 71 on 9 targets. So he averaged 14.2 yards per reception. The first 2 weeks of the season, 5 targets, 59 yards, 29.5 yards per reception. And then you can do the simple math on the first game. Yeah, 2 catches for 41 yards. He was pacing for 20.5 yards.
And then what about Juju? I guess he's the only other one. Because Xavier Worthy, it's a single game. I don't need
for sure. So you take a look at
lower.
You take a look at Juju Smith-Schuster, 60 grabs. This is pacing, 642 yards and 4 touchdowns. I think it'll go down, but I also think they really trust him, they being Patrick Mahomes in particular, on third downs and in crucial spot. They know he's going to be there. He's going to be able to make the catch. He's got great hands. They obviously are going to give him a lot of snaps because they like him in blocking situations. We said this after the...
he's a good blocker.
He's one of the more underrated blocking receivers in football, period. I think it's an underrated part of his game. I know that's not why we talk about receivers, but that's something that he does very, very well. Well, that means you're going to continue to get on the field. And so I don't know if he's going to get 60 for 642 and 4 touchdowns. I think he could have 4 touchdowns this year. I think he's probably more of a 500-yard receiver on, 50 catches, I would say, versus the 60 for 642. But the touchdowns are about spot on. I could easily see him still getting 4 touchdowns this year.
I think the only one that stands out to me is, will Travis Kelce outperform that? Everyone else, because Xavier Worthy and Rashee Rice are coming back, I'm assuming he's going to pace below it. Like, Hollywood won't get anywhere near, honestly, 94 for 888. He'll finish like 65 for 650. And I don't think Tyquan's going to finish with, 40, maybe 43 catches, but they're going to be for less yardage and less touchdowns. I don't think Juju's going to pace for 60 and 6, none of those guys, I think, will pace. Travis is the only one, which is there another gear? Like, is there another number that makes sense for him once those guys come back, like what we talked about with Xavier Worthy on Monday, which is sure looked like Travis Kelce's job was easier. Are there 4 catches for 50 yards a game the rest of the way? And if he averaged that out, because you and I both think, unlike other periods of time, that he'll probably need more of that going forward. Can he average 50 yards a game for the next 13 games, right? Because we think they'll have to play in week 17. That'd put him at 650 more yards. He's already at like maybe be more that 8850 range gold. He's the only guy that I think has more upper end potential. Everyone else's numbers are going to come down because of Worthy and Rice, aren't they? Every single player in there, I have to assume, is coming down from that. Yes. Honestly, kudos to Hollywood Brown, who would have made himself a 900-yard receiver if he was the only guy to throw to. Because for the first
target share matters. Yeah, I mean, target share matters. Now, for Patrick Mahomes, if you were curious, he's pacing for just under 4,000 yards, 3,991 yards, 30 touchdowns, 4 picks. And then the funny one is the rushing numbers. This is where this will trend downward because...
Oh, my God. Is he on pace for like 800 yards rushing or something?
Not quite that. Okay. 94 carries, 553 on the ground with 9 rushing touchdowns because of what happened the first 2 weeks of the year when he was running like touchdowns. Crazy.
Like, you know what it is? This is what's so stupid about what I don't like about award stuff. And I know we're going to talk about it. if he finished with like 8 rushing touchdowns, they will not talk about him getting 8 rushing touchdowns the way Josh Allen and Lamar talked about.
You're 1,000% correct.
They will forget that he has rushing touchdowns. And when they get to the MVP market, they'll start comparing passing touchdowns. And even though rushing touchdowns have been thrown in my face for Lamar Jackson and thrown in my face for Josh Allen in MVP voting for a few years, they won't even mention his rushing touchdowns as if it's a stat that even matters. They will ignore it. They will forget that it even exists. And it's a small thing, and it's a minor complaint. And in the end, we don't care if Patrick Mahomes wins MVPs. We care if he wins Super Bowl MVPs. But I'm like already like pre-getting ready for that MVP conversation, which we'll talk about here in a little bit, where I know those things are going to get into it. Meanwhile, on the baseball end, obviously we aired the J.J. Piccolo, Matt Quatrero end of the season wrap-up presser yesterday. And one thing, and there were a lot of things that stood out, including somebody we can talk about maybe later in the week, and Carter Jensen and Jack Caglione. But it did stand out when they were talking about Salvador Perez, because the line gold that stood out with it was not that Salvador Perez was going to have his option picked up. J.J. Piccolo told us that last week as we were wrapping up the season. But instead, mentioning the idea that Salvador Perez could be here for more than 1 year. He had said, at least the option, at least gold. Do you think that there's an extension for Salvador Perez coming? Because there's part of me that is interested because he hasn't fallen off yet and I want him to retire a Royal. But I also don't want him standing in the way of Carter Jensen eventually being a catch 100 game per season guy. I looked it up earlier in the year, and Freddie Fermin, to his credit, when he was pitching, because they mentioned the Freddie Fermin role earlier in the year, Freddie Fermin was on pace to catch about 75 games for the Royals. So that's what we would expect if they're saying the Freddie Fermin role for Carter Jensen. And then Salvador Perez's numbers just ballooned because they traded him away. That's the part of the extension that kind of gets me. Does it make sense to keep two catchers all the time on your roster if you're not sure? That's what the Salvi extension part of it is. Do you want to keep Carter Jensen from being a full-time catcher for the next 3 years, 2 years?
I think he's young enough for 2 years that that's not a problem if he's splitting time.
What's he, 22?
His exact age, Carter Jensen, let's look it up. He is 22 years old. Okay. So, you know.
So he'd be 24 and become a full-time starter?
He turns 23 in July, so halfway through the season. So he's a young 22 right now. And I think, you know, I heard it the same way you did yesterday, which was it's not so simple as, oh, we're just going to pick up his option. I think there's a real possibility it's a two-year extension or something like that that appeases everybody. And I think there's still going to be realistic conversations about, you know, his role in terms of how much he's behind the dish. But especially early on next season, I think he'll be still behind the dish more than what they were pacing with when Freddie was here.
So don't think he'll catch 75 games, Carter Jensen, next year?
Not necessarily. I think as the season goes on, they will shift to that. But and what will be the first full year for Carter Jensen in the big leagues, I could see them initially not giving him the exact same amount of workload behind the dish as Freddie got at the beginning of the year, and then as the year goes on. But Salvador Perez has been at his best here recently when they haven't asked him to catch on a regular basis. It's kept him fresh. It's been a big reason why I think he's continued to perform at the level he has. But yeah, the Carter Jensen, Freddie Fermin role, I think it'll be similar. I wouldn't be surprised though the first month of the season if we see Salvi catching more than we saw Freddie catch. You know what I mean? The split will be different.
I once again asked some people of the organization, because I fear it from previous experience, there's not a single soul inside that organization that will even hint at the possibility that Carter Jensen would play at a position. So if you're thinking they're going to screw around and try to teach him left or right or first, no one I've spoken to inside the organization will give me any indication that that's even a thought process, an idea, a consideration. The phrase I heard from somebody was, he's a catcher. And that's not what they were saying necessarily about some of the other guys that were coming up at the time. And again, Vinny's so good. He has got a absolute lockdown on first base over Cags. They won't even guarantee Cags the spot. They're saying he's too good for AAA. He's dominated that, and we're past it, and they're moving on to that. It's just the extension part worries me in the how long. This is like playing chicken. Salvador Perez very well might end up a Hall of Famer, and he's going to end up being essentially a lifetime Royal, whether he finishes his career 1 or 2 years somewhere else or not. You're playing age chicken and hoping that the wheels will never come off. And I know, I'm probably done predicting it in June when he goes for some 1 through 45 stretch hitting 219. I'll be like, whatever. it'll work itself out or it won't, and I'll talk about it after, and versus predicting that maybe Father Time has finally caught him. But genuinely, how many years are you going to keep trying to extend and hoping that it never, that age never catches up, Gold? It just feels like a risk, right? And you have a guy. Like, if you had no one, if it was just Luke Maley and, I don't know, whatever other AAA catcher they have, versus even Blake Mitchell, who they have, because that's the other part. Blake Mitchell is such an interesting, let's say they gave a 2-year extension to Salvador Perez. Blake Mitchell's not, he might not even be 2 years away from the big leagues. So is that signifying your willingness to move him? Or is it you're saying 2 years from now, Blake Mitchell will come up and we'll put Carter Jensen in the Salvi role and Blake Mitchell, like, yeah, at some point you have point. Too many catchers.
They definitely have a luxury there that there's some options that they can utilize if they need to use assets to go acquire. I will say, you were asking me how old Carter Jensen is. Blake Mitchell's even younger, though. So
how old's he?
He doesn't turn 21 until next August.
Oh,
so,
my God, he's a kid.
Yeah, he was
I'm just saying he's not that far away.
So even if it was 2 years, I mean, he's still 23, maximum 24. That's not crazy. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like you're causing him to not get any time until he's 26, where you're like, okay, that's way too long.
Is it weird that because I see the top text 816, they've got to let Jensen develop chemistry with the pitching staff at some point. Is it weird that I care less about that now, knowing that half of the pitchers in baseball call their own game?
The pitch comm has changed it a little bit,
and now framing will matter. Not that it won't matter, but it'll matter less because people can still challenge stuff. Like, the chemistry between. Is not the same. Like, look, he's got to feel confident he can stand up and tell a pitcher that's the wrong pitch, but like,
yeah,
and talk to him. But and I'm not saying Salvi's not better at that. That'd be insane. but I mean, Salvi just came up and started catching every day. He had to develop rapport. Like, he was catching pretty much from the beginning. So, I mean, it can work and does work sometimes. Largely, it's just, I don't want Carter Jensen's bat out of the lineup. He's going to be anywhere close to the 20 games I saw this year. And I don't know that yet, but if he's going to hit like that, I'm not going to want him taking a Wednesday off because Salvi's catching and it's a righty on or it's a lefty on the mound.
But don't you agree? Like, we've seen this play, especially under Q. I mean, that will sort itself out. I mean, if Carter Jensen is that special at the plate,
he'll DH every time.
They will find, like, eventually. Now, you could argue, like, how long did they wait too long to do it or whatever? Like, he will find, they will get that part sorted out. I'm confident. I mean, like, this year, the argument, of course, with the Jonathan India thing is, they waited too long to move him out of the leadoff spot.
Yes.
So that would be your concern, fair. But at some point, if Carter Jensen is just consistently hitting, they will find a way to keep him in the lineup. Now, maybe not as quick as we all want. Maybe it won't be in April.
Did it with Adam Frazier. You know they'll do it with anybody.
Yeah, I mean, Adam Frazier, nobody thought he was going to play as much as he did. Even you and I, when we were obviously defending.
DJ Piccolo said it.
And he ended up, because he was hit, they had to keep him in the lineup. I mean, that happens. When someone's that hot and hitting that well, you're going to find a way to keep that guy in the lineup. I don't care. You'll figure the position stuff out.
How high on your offseason wish list, since the first step has already crashed, how high is acquiring Cam Devaney on your offseason wish list?
It's not on the list.
Reacquiring. Get him back.
You know what, though? Here, I'm going to say this. Depth. So it was more about Adam Frazier and the ridiculousness. This is not, like, it makes it seem like
you're anti-Devaney? No, I hope he has.
I'm
a
sure
nice
Cam
score.
Devaney is a very nice person and has worked his ass off to get to where he is. It was more about
the overreaction.
The reaction that people acted like trading for Adam Frazier, that they gave away a future Hall of Famer. You know what I mean? Yeah. That was my whole thing. And obviously the rest worked itself out anyway. With Adam Frazier play pretty well. And now people are out here saying they want Frazier back. It's amazing how quickly things change.
Honestly, they need, like, what's weird about the Royals is I've been covering this team, it seems like, for like 15 years probably now, or 10 plus years. And they've always been very interested and very much like essentially a super utility infield, outfielder, veteran guy. Their ability to choose that person is awful. They just they're like, Chris Owings. You're like, he's never hit. Please don't choose that one. Choose a different one. This time, when they traded for Adam Frazier, they just got it right. So it felt a little bit different. I hope that they, this offseason, find that guy. They just choose the right guy.
Up next, let's talk a little NFL nationally, more so than even locally. What's going on in the league right now? Ross Tucker gives us some insight on that. And, yeah, I want to ask him about the AFC. Is it just the Chiefs and the Bills at this point in time? Our Odyssey NFL insider stops by.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Next.
Back here on Cody and Gold, we will get into some of the MVP odds now, where Patrick Mahomes is at in the odds market over at FanDuel in particular, and some of the narrative and the conversation going around that. It's something we could also get into with our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker. Insider calls brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. Ross, things are feeling a little different in Kansas City, and I feel like nationally, now that the Chiefs are leveled up and the offense looks like a fully functional offense again.
Funny how that works, isn't it? although I do, I mean, listen, it's the nature of the business, which makes it fun, but I do laugh at times about the week-to-week nature of it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, a week ago, everybody's talking about how the Panthers beat the Falcons 30-0. And then the Panthers go to New England and they lose 42-6. So, you know, as you guys know, there's so much that goes into each week's game plan, and different teams match up better or worse with other teams, that, you know, you can't do the transitive property in the NFL, and you can't take any one result, I would say, and extrapolate that to mean that the Chiefs are back or any team's great or bad or whatever. But when you start to stack them up, you know, in a row, then you have a better sense of what a team is. And clearly, the Chiefs move the ball better, look better, all those things, when they have Xavier Worthy, which is huge. And then, as I've been saying on other national outlets, when they ask me, I think that they'll look even better when they get Rashee Rice. You know, I mean, whatever the impact is of Worthy, I think with Rashee Rice, it's almost like a compound effect, because then you have two guys that the other team really, really needs to worry about.
When you look at their offense, do you think by the end of the year, if you had to go ahead and predict, do you think by the end of the year, everyone will unilaterally agree this is a top 3 to 5 offense in the NFL?
Chiefs this year?
Yep.
No. I mean, they might. But I'm not going to sit here and just put that out there and say we'll all agree based on one performance that they'll be a top 3 to 5 offense. I think there's a pretty decent chance of it. I mean, you have a Hall of Fame quarterback, Hall of Fame coach. So I would say that that is a pretty good start for any team to be considered top 3, top 5. And because of some of the young guys playing on the offensive line, the left side, maybe it takes them a few weeks with Rice and Worthy. I mean, they have a really good chance, is the answer, Cody.
When you look at what they're doing in the running back spot, how would you handle that if you were them? They gave Rashard Smith more touches. We think Isaiah Pacheco lacks vision at the very least out of there, and Kareem Hunt doesn't seem to have a ton of juice. Would you trade for a running back, just play the rookie more? How would you handle it for a veteran team?
I don't think I would trade for one. I think Rashard Smith has some juice and has shown some promise. And I don't know who you're going to get in there that you feel is definitely going to be better than what you have with Hunt and Pacheco. You know, Pacheco's still kind of working his way back a little bit. I think it's too early to pull that trigger, which is also one of the benefits of the trade deadline, you know, being later than it used to be.
We're talking to Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider. I know you mentioned it's a week-to-week league, and I'm 100% in agreement there. That's what makes it fun. But at the same time, the AFC, the way it's shaping up, it sure looks like, are we Chiefs and Bills and everybody else again? Like now with the Ravens issues, with Lamar being hurt?
You know, probably. I guess I would tell you, I still actually think the Indianapolis Colts are pretty darn good. You know, if A.D. Mitchell doesn't drop those two ball, you know, drop the ball and get the holding penalty on the Taylor touchdown, they're 4-0 with a win at the L.A. Rams on their resume. So let's put it this way. I think the Colts are going to win that division and have a great chance to get to the divisional round and show what they can do. I think at this point it would be an upset if it's not the Bills and the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. But let's see what the Ravens look like when Lamar gets back to health. You know, obviously they've had a rough go of it, but I still think they're the class of that division and have a pretty good chance to ultimately win that division. And then maybe they can have a run in the playoffs that they haven't really had under Lamar Jackson and John Harbaugh for whatever reason.
Do you think it's fair, though? I mean, at this point with Lamar, we all know he's won multiple MVPs. He's on a Hall of Fame path. Nobody disputes that or shouldn't dispute that. But his career now is all judged because of what he's accomplished in the regular season. It's all, what are you going to do in the playoffs for me? And that's all any of us really are waiting and looking for him to do and have success.
Well, the ironic thing about that, Alex, is that's the exact same thing with Josh Allen, maybe to a lesser extent, because it feels like, for whatever reason, that Josh Allen's won more playoff games. You know, he's been to more AFC championship games than Lamar. But the Bills and the Ravens, Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, I mean, they're basically all in the same spot. And when I go on in those markets, all they want to know is this the year that we can beat the Chiefs? Is this the year, Ross? Is this the year that we're going to get it done, that we're going to beat the Chiefs? And I always have the exact same answer, which is I have no idea. But it's kind of hard to believe it's going to happen until, right? I mean, especially if the Chiefs continue to improve and when they get Rice back, that's going to make it even harder for these other teams.
On the Chargers end, I really think, and so like going into the game, I liked the Giants to have a chance to beat the Chargers because of their offensive line issues. They then lost Joe Alt. I feel like, Ross, we are way underselling that for the next month, that's going to make their life hell. Like, it's going to be very hard for Justin Herbert, and this team's going to have to scrape in some wins with their current offensive line situation. They might be on the backup or third string guy at all five spots.
Well, yeah, and it's unbelievable. Certain teams, like, what is the deal with California? Because it feels like the Niners and the Chargers, and maybe to a little bit of a lesser extent the Rams, just get so many injuries every year. I mean, this is the Chargers season every year. This is the, you know, the Niners every year. It's really uncanny at this point.
Your podcast, one of your podcasts, Ross, you do, the Even Money podcast, your co-host there, Steve Fezzik, was talking about the Philadelphia Eagles finding ways to win, but I believe he called them phonies, or at least the wins phony at this point in time. What do you make of that, and have you seen enough from Philadelphia? I think I have, even if the offense got off to a slow start, to still say they're you know, the best, the class of the NFC.
Well, so first of all, you have to understand, anytime, you know, you're dealing with someone that's coming from the sports betting side, and that's the Even Money Betting podcast, they come from it typically from a number standpoint. Mm-hmm. And, the Eagles have less total yards than their opponents this season, yet they're 4-0, and they've had back-to-back games where they would not have won if it was not for a blocked kick return for a touchdown. I guess I would say, though, if you really look at the NFL, I mean, couldn't you call a lot of wins phony? You know, like every week, you know, the Rams win over the Colts was phony because A.D. Mitchell dropped the ball going in the end zone. Like, you know, I don't know. There's a certain percentage of wins, guys, that I think you would say are phony every week, in the sense that I saw where Drew Brees said if CeeDee Lamb catches the ball, or if, you know, they don't get the field goal blocked, the Eagles are 2-2. I mean, that's the NFL.
Right.
If ifs and buts, and you guys know the rest of that expression, I mean, that's how it works. So I look at it maybe the other way with the Eagles. I mean, they just beat the Chiefs, the Rams, and the Bucks, three teams that are legit, like, could get to the Super Bowl. They beat all three of them without really playing their best. That's what I always feel like is a really, really good sign in the NFL. If that happens, if you're able to win games, especially against good teams, when you're not playing your best, or, you know, arguably only, you know, playing your best for a half and they're still winning these games, I think that probably tells you the Eagles are pretty darn good.
When you look at just the Chiefs matchup this weekend, I am curious from a former player's perspective, what did you make about two coaches threatening each other over possible sign stealing there in Jacksonville? Just for starters, Ross, I don't think I'd ever try to pick a fight with Saleh. Looks like he'd kick almost everyone's ass in the league. I certainly wouldn't if I were another coach. But outside of that, do you actually think the Jags have some intricate sign-stealing thing that the team should care about?
Well, definitely don't mess with Robert Saleh if you're Liam Cohen.
Yeah.
I mean, unless Liam Cohen has some black belt that I'm not aware of, you know, or, you know, has some ultimate fighting skills, I'm very confident he doesn't want that from Saleh.
Yeah.
I agree. He doesn't want the smoke on that, I don't think.
No, definitely not. But whatever. I mean, he took offense to it. That's fine if that gave him extra motivation or whatever. But that was one of those, like, hold me back. I want a piece of him. Hold me back. While he's already behind three of his linemen. You know what I mean? Like, he could have gone right up to him and said something to him. He did the walk away, be behind his linemen and say that. Give me a break.
I'm just surprised. Like, it's funny. It's like, it's not nearly as big of a story if you just don't say, keep my name out of your mouth. Then it's just like the one clip where he's like, yeah, we think they got something going on. We'll try to be careful with it. He made it a bigger story by saying something on the field after. Something I don't think he would have said had he lost the game, Ross.
That's exactly correct. And also, situations like that, it's like me thinks he does protest too much. You know, like if it's no big deal, then why are you getting all upset about it? When you get all upset about it, then you're making it seem like it is a big deal, that you are worried about it.
Lastly, Ross, before we let you go, last week it was Jaxson Dart making his debut. Of course, got the win against the Chargers. We find out this morning that Dylan Gabriel is going to make a start internationally there for the Browns against the Vikings. What do you make of that decision to also have Flacco still be the backup?
Well, I think that says a lot about Shedeur Sanders and how they feel about Shedeur Sanders right now. Pretty clearly, right? I mean, if they felt better about Shedeur Sanders, you would think that they would want him to be out there if something happens to Gabriel. You know, like if they're moving on from Flacco to Gabriel, you would think that the next thing is they would want to be able to see what Shedeur Sanders has if
right.
Gabriel falters or gets
sure.
hurt. But they don't even want him out there yet, which I think says something about something.
I mean, it's obvious, like, his reputation in the league is really weird. And, of course, there was the story that said he didn't want to go play behind Lamar Jackson. It's like he could be starting this weekend for a talented Baltimore team, right? I mean, it seems like he would still prefer to be given an opportunity, but he's not even given a chance in Cleveland, and they have nobody.
Yeah, I mean, look, we can talk about it as much as we want, but I think, you know, what's going on there is that the Browns don't want to put him out there. They don't trust him. They don't think it would go well. And it's probably in his best interest. You know, it probably would go very, very poorly.
Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider. Appreciate it, man. And we'll check in with you next week.
Sounds great. Thank you, guys.
Ross Tucker joins us each and every Wednesday here on Cody and Gold. Insider calls brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side. Yeah, the Gabriel,
bad spot to put Gabriel in.
It is, but also, like, hey, you were drafted. You know, this, you want your shot in the league? Here you go. You know,
assume
what I mean?
You want to play.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
here you go.
Would you rather sit on the bench all year? Of course not. So yeah, it's not. I agree with you. It's not ideal, but hey, you're getting a chance to start, man. And there's probably a lot of people heading into the draft process did not think you were going to be starting a game in the NFL in 2025. So hey, let's see what happens. And yeah, the Sanders stuff. Yeah, I don't. They clearly have told us how they view him, but also at the same time, I agree that don't you at least want to just, you can move on from him after the season if you just saw him play and he stunk. Like, you know, Gabriel plays, and let's say he plays poorly or he gets, you know, let's say he gets
he's
hurt.
A third round
let's
pick.
Say
he's probably going to stay
let's say
in the
he gets hurt. All right. Then Joe Flacco gets back in the game. You know, I don't, to me, I would just find out if Sanders even has it and move
I
on.
Think
unless they
play.
Think he needs to develop more and they actually, you know, do want to develop and they're willing to ride this thing out a lot longer than I think the general public is. The general public just wants us to have an answer on Sanders right away and be done. Maybe the Browns are trying to view it a little more long-term.
I mean, for a sixth-round pick, typically that would be, here's the thing. It's only the name that we would do it. If we just said
where
he was taken, mm-hmm. that would normally be a very slow development process with very intentional means behind it. So, yeah, I, you know, they can take their time with him. I don't blame them. I knew they couldn't start Flacco forever.
Let's get to some established quarterbacks in the league that have a chance to win MVP this year. Check in every couple weeks on the MVP market. These are over at FanDuel. Obviously, you can shop around different books, find different odds, but these are just based off of theirs. Josh Allen is the MVP favorite. Justin Herbert, second best odds, 6-1. Mahomes, essentially second best odds as well, plus 650. So almost the same odds as Herbert. Jordan Love out in Green Bay, 8-1. And then Matthew Stafford has the next best odds. Now there's a big drop off. He is 14-1. And then you got to go way down the list to find other guys like Baker Mayfield, et cetera. It is very early in the year. We've gone through this enough. We've had legal betting on the Kansas side. Missouri side's coming in December long enough to know that this market is going to shift another 25 times, okay, before we get to the end of the year. However, with that said, I think it is very clear Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes are going to either be the favorites or have the second or third best odds the rest of the season. I don't think there's any dispute unless you think somebody's getting knocked out for the year.
Yeah.
Josh Allen is going to win that division. He's going to be clearly, you know, right in this conversation all year. And I think Patrick Mahomes, if they can win this division with what he was able to do the first couple weeks of the season with the lack of weapons, that narrative can work in his favor. I would not want to put money on Josh Allen at minus 105 right now, but Patrick Mahomes at plus 650, I think is an opportunity still. It's really the divisional convo. I mean, if Justin Herbert and the Chargers can, you know, knock off the
division,
Chiefs,
I do think he'll win the award.
Yeah, because most likely means his numbers are probably good. He's playing well. He's now got an injury issue that works in his favor from a narrative perspective if he overcomes it with the O-line issues, as you brought up, Cody, with Ross. And then, he's got a rookie running back now that's going to be the guy behind him. All that helps his cause. But again, we've gone over the trends. Typically, like 95% of the time, you have to win your division if you're the quarterback to win MVP.
Here's the truth. If you're telling me it's the exact same amount of money to be won, and in this case, it's actually just a hair better on Mahomes, do you think I'm putting my money on Mahomes or Herbert? Mahomes! 1,000 times. I'd choose somebody else further down this list. I'd soon choose Stafford before I chose Herbert, because at least he's playing in an injured division where he's got Puka Nacua, who leads the NFL in receptions, I think, and maybe yards, too. So he's got an elite-level weapon, an elite-level coach, and could just go on to win the West, which we've, again, pointed out, has to be the first step of getting into the MVP conversation anyway. Admittedly, Patrick Mahomes is my preseason MVP selection. When we went through these picks, I told you the narrative would help Patrick Mahomes, and the fact that he hadn't won it in a few years, they'd be ready to hand him the award, and voter fatigue is always a thing. It's hard to win it back-to-back years. Look at Lamar last season, who, not by much, but by a margin, should have been the MVP. I don't think it's like he was 50% better than Josh Allen.
He was better in every category besides rushing touchdowns than Josh Allen was last season.
He was. And so, like, you would think that that should have been the year. I think Mahomes is going to win the award again if his offense looks anywhere close to what it looked like last week. That's the question you have to ask yourself about betting on Mahomes.
So,
do you think his offense will roll into top five form the rest of the way, and he'll get to 40 touchdowns and 4,300 yards, and the numbers will support the rest of it?
Yeah, but so you're telling me that if, let's say, they're 12-5 and the Chargers are 12-5, mm-hmm. the Chargers win the division, then Mahomes has no shot to win the award?
Correct.
I think that's ridiculous.
I'm not saying it's ridiculous.
This has been like a betting conversation for years.
I'm not saying it's an unfair system. I'm just telling you how it works.
Why is an award that is purely a statistical award, as it is in every other sport, based on if you win the division or not, when there's so many different things that go your way?
I'm just trying to win money. This is a betting conversation to me, and I'm just telling you how. If we would have the convo,
it just doesn't make any sense.
It shouldn't be that way. That's more than fair. I don't disagree with you. We can have the convo of like, hey, that shouldn't matter. I agree that it shouldn't be the end all be all. I'm just telling you, like, from a betting perspective, the convo is different. It's a, can I win money or not with the bet? You can't win money on MVP if your quarterback doesn't win
the divisional thing. To me, is more of a coaching thing than it is. Like if the Bills go 15-2, Sean McDermott should win Coach of the Year, point blank. I understand that they got an easy schedule, but
We don't disagree. I mean, Andy Reid should have won Coach of the Year last year, too.
I know, but he can't win it. Yeah. He's always 1,000-1 every year to win it.
But what makes the stipulation them winning the division or not?
Here, I'll try to find the trend for
you. The tiebreaker, essentially. Like what makes it that?
Nothing other than
it was one.
I understand, but there's no criteria. So why would it be?
It's created criteria through narrative.
If Patrick Mahomes throws for 500 more yards and 45 touchdowns, and Herbert throws for 30 touchdowns and has more interceptions, but the Chargers win by half a game because they started 3-0 in the division.
Yeah.
It that doesn't mean that he should be the MVP because he, and I don't know why.
Well, that's
why the betting odds would lean in your favor if you as an individual, because it's an individual award, were not as good as somebody else.
It's It's a fair take. I'm not saying it's a bad take. I'm just telling you, like, you're asking why has it happened. I guess a good answer. I would say you're saying, well, why is that a trend? Because it's a trend, right? Like any award market, if for 30 years of a sample, if it just so happens that 25 quarterbacks won MVP, why is that the case? It shouldn't be. Well, I'm just trying to win. I'm telling you, you have a better chance to win MVP if you're a quarterback. You have a better chance to win MVP if you win the division. Drew, I don't know why they do that, but that is clearly part of the narrative that the voters use. If you're saying it shouldn't be, that's more than fair, and I don't disagree necessarily with you.
I got to say, it seems to me to be a pretty simple explanation. It's because people don't think you should be the MVP of the league if you can't even win your division. How are you the most valuable player? You couldn't even get yourself to the top. It's pretty simple how they create the narrative in their head. I'm just telling you, like, that's the argument for it. And I don't even think it's necessarily a totally wrong argument. Again, Stafford is probably the one, if I wasn't betting on Mahomes on that list.
I got the numbers, sorry.
That I would actually bet on. Patrick Mahomes has 939 yards. Stafford has more touchdowns, one more interception, and like 200 more yards.
If you lean MVP, if you lean MVP to the division winner, it tells me you're not actually watching the games as much as you say you are.
Because how are you winning?
Because I think if you watch with your own two eyes, Lamar Jackson was the MVP last year, and Josh Allen was not the MVP last year.
Yeah,
watch with your two eyes, Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in football. And if, let's say, the division goes the way it goes, Patrick Mahomes has to overcome more, it would seem, at times than Justin Herbert does. So why would that? Like, it tells me that the voters are not actually watching the games as much as maybe they should, and they're just leaning on, well, they won the division, so I guess I got to vote for him.
Yeah, so just a couple of the numbers behind what we're talking about. The last 15 MVP awards, 13 of them won their division. There's two exceptions. 08 Manning won MVP despite the Colts finishing second. They were a playoff team still. The 2012 award went to Adrian Peterson, which in its own right is an anomaly because most of the time running backs don't win it, but he did.
He had 2,000 yards.
They didn't win the division, but he also had a historic benchmark at the time. With that. So is it saying it's a 0.0% chance? No, it's saying that in the weeds, but sports talk convo about this is different than this betting convo about this. It just is. Like, betting conversation is numbers based. It's kind of what Ross Tucker just told us about the Philadelphia thing, right? Like, betting, it's going to lean more into trends and numbers, and you're trying to give yourself the best odds to win MVP. So if you tell me that I'm picking, you may think so-and-so should win MVP, but you also believe they can't win their division, the odds would tell you it's not the smart bet to bet on the guy you don't think can win the division. It's not saying it can't happen. It's just saying it doesn't bode well for you. Trends are not bulletproof, but you're trying to give yourself the best value on a bet and the best chance to cash the ticket. And I'm just saying the math says,
Don't bet on Justin Herbert if you don't think he's winning the division.
But if you think he can, then yeah, I think it's a great bet.
Yeah. That's what it boils down to.
Anyway.
They're not going to choose Herbert over Mahomes.
And last year, and I think this is we don't need to get into a... Drew will get mad because he'll say, you just bring it up Cincinnati. This actually fits for this conversation. All I'm saying is I think you also have that view because last year Burrow put up amazing numbers, didn't make the playoffs, and you probably thought he should have been maybe an MVP candidate. And there were people out there that thought he would. He had the minute they were not a playoff team, it was over.
I agree with that. They had to make the playoffs for him to win it. I just think that the most...
But you're drawing an invisible line slightly earlier. Do you see? To make the playoffs is not way different than the game difference it takes. They would have made the playoffs if they won one more game. It didn't actually change anything about his narrative.
Well, then I think that, he should have been the MVP then. If we're going to be honest, then I think he should have won it. If we're going to be honest and it wasn't...
I still think Lamar had a better year, but yes.
Oh, no, there's no question that Josh Allen did not have the best year by any stretch, more than Lamar Jackson. But people got tired of voting, which is also another problem with the award, is you're not actually awarding the... If we're going to do the most valuable player... Who cares if they repeat? You have to do the most value. You have to do it. You have to do it the same way. Just because you got tired voting for somebody doesn't mean that they shouldn't win the award. Like, I think it was a soft MVP to give Josh Allen. Josh Allen should have won it 2 years ago, probably. Lamar Jackson should have won it last year.
Humans voting on awards, and everybody's going to be happy. Otherwise, we would just have computers kick out whoever had the most yards and touchdowns would win it every single year, and thank goodness we don't have that system either. Up next, let's get to the Jags and that defense and what the Chiefs are going to deal with on Monday Night Football.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.